I want to invite you to turn to the book of Philippians. We've been talking about getting joy in our lives, and I think one of the things this book teaches us is that loving others is not only an essential part of the gospel, but it's just an important part of experiencing a life of joy. And what I decided to do a couple weeks ago for the sermon this morning was I really wanted to try to get more practical about how to live a life of love. And I'm doing so for a number of reasons. One of them is because of my age. I'm going to turn 60 in a couple of weeks. And what the AARP is telling me is this is a milestone. Now, one of the things I'm learning as I'm talking to people my age and older is this. For a lot of us, we did not think we're going to live life as long as we are going to live it. And that presents a problem for a lot of us. And so it's impacted my preaching, the way I look at preaching, because I realize that I need to talk to people as if they're going to be here a while longer, even longer than they may think. And so I don't want to just give sermons to help people have spiritual hospice care, because it may be a long time before that time of hospice comes. So how do we live out this Christian life for what may be many more years on this earth than we had anticipated? Do you know what the fastest demographic is in the United States in terms of percentages of people reaching that milestone? It's not 60-year-olds. It's not 70-year-olds. It's not 80-year-olds. It's not 90-year-olds. It's not 100-year-olds. You know what it is? 110-year-olds. So what are you going to do if you're here for a long time from today? I think God's Word has something to say about that, and I think we need to apply it. And so I really want to make sure that we apply some of the things that we've been talking about. Because number two, and this is more directed at myself, I don't want to take it to my world. A few years ago when I preached at Shiloh, I had a committee of all ages to help me plan out my sermons, and then we would talk about how well they're executed. And you know the biggest constructive criticism I received from that was? It was, how do I live out what you're talking about? In other words, okay, I understand the message of the book of Colossians, or I understand what 1 Samuel is teaching, and I even understand you gave me three ways to apply this, but how? How do I apply that? I know I'm not supposed to be angry, but how? I've known that all my life, but how do I live a life without the kind of anger that's inappropriate? And multiply that out a bunch of times. You see what I'm talking about. And I thought that was very fair. I think one of the hard things to do in preaching is not just tell people what to do, not just tell people why to do it or why to refrain from doing it, but it's how. And so I really want to make sure before we continue on and finish up Philippians, you understand how to live out a life of loving others. And what I wanted to zero in this morning is how your body can sabotage this. And what to do about that. And I think if I can pull this off, then I'll help you better love others and better experience a life of joy. Because I'm here to say your body will sabotage a life of joy. Because your body will sabotage a life of Christ. And that's because we live in a fallen world. And so I'm going to unpack that. But just to remind you, we talked in this series about how these people in Corinth, these Christians, are not experiencing joy in their lives. And one of the reasons Paul is constantly talking about joy and rejoicing is not because they're experiencing it, it's because they're not. And we've talked some about the division that's there, but there are other clues that tell us how the lives that they are living are not joyful lives. For example, we'll talk about this more in a few weeks. But why don't you look at chapter 4. You remember that famous verse chapter 4, verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. We sing a song about that, all right? Rejoice in the Lord always, and again, I say rejoice. Have you ever heard that song? Okay. They're not rejoicing. And here's some reasons why. Look at verse 5. Let your gentleness be evident to all. Why? Because they're not experiencing gentleness in their lives. Do not be anxious about anything. Why? Because they're anxious. And they're anxious about a lot of things they should not be anxious about. Look at verse 7. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts. Why is he writing that? Because they're not experiencing the peace of God. Verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable. Why is he writing that? Because they're not thinking that way. That's not what they're experiencing. That's not what they're thinking. Verse 11, he talks about how, whether in rich times or poor times, he's been content. Why does he write that? Because they're not. So, why is that? I want to unpack that in just a second. But the main thing he tells them in terms of Christian teaching and doctrine to address that is found in chapter 2. So before I talk about our bodies and what they do to us, look at chapter 2. This is a passage we preached last week, but I want to talk today about how to live it out. Verse 1, if you have any encouragement from being united in Christ, with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. So do you see how joy is mixed up in love and purpose? To live is Christ. Now, if we die, that's gain. But living, expressing Christ through our love, that is the joyful life. Verse 3, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Are they having a problem with that in Philippi? Yes. That's how they're living. Don't do that, Paul says. But in humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. And then he gets into what they call the Christ hymn, and we read this last week. But the gospel is not just the death of Jesus, the burial of Jesus, and the resurrection of Jesus, is also the life of Jesus. Remember, Jesus lived with God and had all the beings in heaven worshiping him, and he chose to leave that behind, become a person, a human being, which in and of itself is a big switch from living in heaven as a spiritual being, having the worship of those beings in heaven. To leave that behind, just to put on skin, was a big deal. But he did that. Why? Because he was thinking about our needs. And so he is putting that over what he needed. Even the physical life, the experience here in this world, he put our needs over that. He was willing to die for our spiritual needs. And that is the ability to live with God forever because of his work. That was his mindset. That's what we call the mind of Christ. It's that unconditional love. It's a life of unconditional love. It's a life of putting other people's needs above our own. Now, remember me telling you last week that we were wired to do this? We were wired to love each other unconditionally, to love other people unconditionally, even to love our enemies unconditionally. And we were. We were programmed. Going back to the Garden of Eden, when God made us, he made us in this perfect place. And Psalm 139 tells us that each of us were fearfully and wonderfully made. We come into this world innocent and is good. But Genesis 3 tells us we're also frustratingly fallen. You ever driven by a house that you knew at one time to be a beautiful house, maybe a showpiece in that community, but now it's a broken down house. It's in bad shape. And you lament that because you knew what it was. But now look at it. And that's us. That's what the Bible teaches we are. Now, I'm not talking about losing our hair, getting flabby, getting arthritis. That's not what I mean so much. I'm talking about spiritually speaking. And it's reflected in physical ways. But because we chose to sin, which is, in essence, going against God for our own selfish purposes. It's the opposite of unconditional love. It's selfishness. It is a concern totally for self. Because we chose to do that, that had all sorts of consequences. One of them is we're going to die. Right? We're going to die. But there are other consequences too. And it impacts the way we can love each other unconditionally. It impacts the way we can put other people's needs above our own. And it robs us of our joy. And as I mentioned last week, fighting this is like swimming upstream against a strong current. It's like going out to the beach and getting that riptide threatening to take you away. It's hard. It is very hard because we are so frustratingly fallen. You see, our body is a chemical laboratory. Did you know that? I probably preached a sermon here 40 years ago about it has been written that chemically, if you add up all the chemicals in our body, it adds up to $1.98. And our world is so shallow because we put ourselves as just chemicals and we're more than that. We're spiritual beings. And if I did preach that, it was true. But now I appreciate how the chemicals within us can turn against us. Chemicals that were originally designed to help us. And you don't have to memorize these if you don't want to. But I'm just trying to explain to you just four ways that we can have our job robbed, joy robbed by what's flowing within our veins and what to do to address that. One I talked about before is cortisol. I've been thinking about preaching a sermon and calling it, "Why is everybody so angry and what to do about it?" Have we had an angry last few months? In this country? Have we had an angry last few months in this world? Absolutely. Why is everybody so angry? Well, you've heard me say before, one of the reasons why is there is a chemical within us, cortisol, and it's designed to help us survive. It was a gift of God. If we saw a bear, we knew what to do to survive. The problem is most of us aren't having to fight for survival. As a matter of fact, all those stories about the rich people and the fairy tales, the kings and queens, and then everybody else is poor. What we tend to do is we tend to identify with the poor people. But actually, when you compare us to the rest of the world, we're the rich people. And there are people in the world who have to fight to live. And they need that cortisol to help them survive. And they're not going to live as long as we do. We don't have that problem. You know our biggest problem? We got to figure out how we're going to entertain ourselves. My kids and I had a good conversation this past week because they've been looking at the research about how many people are having trouble because of binge-watching TV and shows like Netflix. And what that's doing is people are starting to fantasize about the lives they're living, and it's causing their body chemicals to go off, and so they're becoming depressed or they're getting very angry, and it's disrupting their lives. And it all has to do with the appetite they have for entertainment. See, we have so many options for what we can do to entertain ourselves because we are so rich. Do you know that we have more than Rockefeller did 100 years ago, the richest man in the world? Everybody here has more than he had. We have antibiotics. He didn't. We have air conditioning. He didn't. And you just go on and on and on. We're not in a survival mode time. But sometimes our lives live like that. And so one of the ways our bodies betray us is if we elevate something that we don't like to the level of survival, we will fight as if survival depends upon it. What does a good mama do when the bobcat comes trying to get her kids? She gets a baseball bat and tries to go for his nose, right? She's going to either win or she's going to die trying. That's what this chemical does when we're not in survival mode, but we're pretending like we are. Have you ever seen somebody whose self-esteem was so damaged they became like that cartoon in Warner Bros.? What's the one that went around just doing damage everywhere, just a whirling dervish? A Tasmanian devil? You ever seen anybody at work do that? Just destroy everything? And you're going, what in the world? They thought their survival was at stake because their boss criticized their work. And they took a good criticism and elevated it to the place of, my job is on the line, my life is on the line. And so they just tore up everything for everybody else. Speaking of the vision of the church, you know one of the recurring memories my sister has from growing up in the church? When she was 12 years old, after a Sunday night service, she was walking out the back door. This wasn't here, but somewhere else. And an elder was standing at the door. Another elder was walking toward him. Within the eldership, I know this, my sister didn't know this, there was dissension. And I don't know what was said that night, but as this elder walked out, he offered his hand in a handshake. The other elder said, don't you touch me or I'll break every bone in your body. And he said it like he meant it, just with anger. And my sister dissolved into tears. It's so traumatizing. And she still remembers it today. That's been 40-something years ago. Now, what was going on there? There was an issue within the eldership that they had elevated to survival. This was going on inside. Something that was designed to help us survive against bobcats and cougars and bears. And this elder was using it for an issue that was before the eldership. And I can assure you it was not a salvation issue. Now, was he experiencing joy? No. And it was self-sabotage. Now, here's a second one. Endorphins. Well, I feel like I'm being called to heaven. I hear the heavenly choir now. Is it just me? Or endorphins. We talked about this before. You exercise, you feel good. It can also be produced by laughter. I think I've told you before, I'll hear as much laughter when I'm at funeral meals, either before or after a funeral meeting with families, as I'll hear in any experience. Why is that? Well, they're remembering good things, but also it's helping them heal. It's the endorphins. Matter of fact, there's a guy named Norman Cousins who wrote a famous book. He got a terminal illness, and he started watching comedies to get himself to laugh. And he credits that with helping him survive that illness. And he did. He lived many more years. So body chemicals can be important. God has blessed us with endorphins. That's one of the reasons why exercise can be such a good thing. But it can be a bad thing, too, when we become obsessed with it. You ever seen anybody that's obsessed with exercise? And it dominates their life to the extent to where other parts of their life, maybe families are being neglected. So again, we can be fallen. Now here's the third one. And folks, this has been so big this year and is still big. Dopamine. This is a chemical that God has given us to set goals and to meet those goals. Again, originally back in the ancient times, it had to do with survival. All right, my family's going to eat today. I've got to go out and I've got to find ducks. And I've got to kill those ducks so we can eat tonight. Have meat at the table. So daddy goes out and he goes duck hunting. And he sees some ducks swimming way down the river. And he goes and he sneaks around and gets to it just in time as they fall up to where he can kill two or three. And there's a surge of a good feeling, and that's dopamine. And that's good. That's the way God made us. When you set a goal, dopamine is what drives you to meet that goal. And then you meet that goal and you feel good. It's part of it. It's a good thing. But you know what else it does when our fallen nature takes over? It's what causes the guy who gambles. And I have a good friend who is Mr. Winsboro High School, who committed suicide just a few years ago, who had it all until he got a gambling addiction. What was that about? Well, one of the things was his body was sabotaging him. Every time he gambled on something he thought he knew a lot about, his dopamine was working, especially if he won. It was a hit of a good feeling, and he became obsessed by that, and he lost everything. This is what happens to the alcoholic. This is what drives the alcoholic, is dopamine. Any addict is driven by dopamine. This is what happens when you have a group of teenagers at the family table doing this instead of talking to each other. And incidentally, even in the corporate world, you know, there are more and more corporations, more and more workplaces where at meetings they ban cell phones. You have to put them in the basket before going in. It can be disruptive to the process of creating an organization that does what it's supposed to do. And people are doing that because they're getting a shot of dopamine. It's like a drug. So when I talk about your body being a chemical laboratory and the importance of managing it well, what I'm saying is I cannot tell you the frustration I've had over the past 40 years working with people and seeing them engage in self-sabotaging behaviors and scratching my head as to why. And there are a lot of reasons involved. But these three that I just mentioned, these three chemicals, that's a big one. And it's going to take a monumental effort to overcome those bad habits and change, those bad behaviors and change, because they're going against, they're going against their body chemistry. As a matter of fact, what I like to say now is, we talk about people who are engaged in drugs and who are arrested for illegal drugs. There's more drug activity going on today than ever that people will never be arrested for. It's self-drugging with the body chemicals. I'll give you another one. Eating. You know how many people are impacting their lives by what they eat and the amount they eat? Or what they don't eat? You see, there are people who are trying to regulate their body chemistry by saying, I will not eat. And then they get these diseases we call anorexia and bulimia. And what's ironic about this is how many of these people are affluent people. And you would be surprised at how many people that you may even be aware of that passed away. The paper said it was a heart attack or this or that, but it was bulimia. It was anorexia. They starved themselves to death. On the other hand, eating too much, destroying the body because it makes them feel good. They're trying to do something instinctively. They're not consciously doing it, but instinctively trying to regulate this body because they want joy in their lives. And they're systematically destroying their health. There is a graph that I have that shows the progression of obesity in the United States from the 1980s to now. And it's done in the context of why medical costs are so high. But it is astounding. It's like an infestation of locust on a map. You start out with the map being pristine, and then this cloud moves over, and it becomes more and more intense, to where in some states, it's in the double digits now in terms of obesity. What does that mean? Increase in stroke, heart attack, cancer, diabetes. Why is this happening? People are trying to find something in their lives they're not experiencing. And so they're doing it through gluttony. Ladies and gentlemen, never in the history of the world have so many poor people died of gluttony and so many rich people died of starvation. But that's what's happening in America. It is a spiritual problem that is rooted in our physical makeup. So, there's a lot more involved, but I just want to limit it to these four because I thought that would be good for conversation. What Christ is calling us to, as I mentioned last week, is unconditional love. What happens when you practice unconditional love? Your body generates a chemical. It's called oxytocin. And ladies and gentlemen, this is not a fairy tale. This is real. This has been measured. There are economists working with neurobiologists who've been researching this for the past 40 years through blood work, through imaging. So I'm not telling you an hypothesis. I'm telling you something that has been proven. When you do something generous for someone else, something that's unconditionally loving, your body will create oxytocin. And that's why you will have this good feeling afterwards. And I think that good feeling can be linked with joy. And that's how God created you. So, What I'm trying to tell you is, how do you live this out? First of all, you understand that when God is calling you in Philippians 2 to follow the life of Christ, to have the mind of Christ, to make these decisions, that you were created to do that. And that the antidote to pursuing a life that destroys joy because of your body chemistry and your fallenness, the antidote is to focus on showing the love of Christ every day, every moment, and living it out, loving unconditionally. I like to put it this way. Quadrants. Endorphins, cortisol, dopamine, oxytocin. Or explain it this way. You can choose, I'm going to focus on a healthy high, endorphins, running, exercise, survival, cortisol, what I call a loaded high, dopamine, or unconditional love. Now, loaded high, set the goals. Healthy high, do exercise. If you need to survive, survive. But let me recommend you focus on that top left one, unconditional love. And if you focus on that, I think all the other things will fall into place. You get up every morning and you recognize that someone, the evil one, is going to try and sabotage you. And is going to try to get you to go down a path that will take you away from Jesus and rob you of your joy. It could be a family member. Has anybody here ever had a family member that knew what triggered you to react in a way that was inappropriate? So there's a body chemistry thing going on there. It could be the cortisol, survival. It could be they say something like, I knew you would never amount to anything. Do people in family say that sometimes to other family members? Absolutely. So there is a temptation to allow that surge, my survival is at stake, that anger, whatever it is, to go in that direction. But no, you choose the direction of unconditional love. Or the workplace. I take out the Philippians references, but I preach this when I meet with organizations sometimes who only talk about workplace chemistry and culture. Because it applies so well. Same thing for churches. You know, we want to reach out. I appreciate what you were talking about earlier about the needs of schools and everything. We can change the world through unconditional love and lead them to Christ. Because a lot of these folks have already heard the gospel and they don't want to hear it again from us. And we start preaching it. They shut it down. But love them when they're unlovable. Give them hope by your example when there's no hope. And before long, if there's any chance to reach them, it's going to be because of this. They want what you have. Your swing thought is unconditional love. For example, in the workplace, you got somebody gossiping about you, and it's getting traction, and it may get you fired. Now, survival would say, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to begin a campaign in the opposite direction against this person. And I'm going to see if I can get them fired. So I'm going to find something I can say about them that will cause other people to talk negatively and try to balance out what happened to me. Have you ever heard of that happening before? Gossip, a person responds in kind. This happens all the time. It happens in churches, happens in the workplace, happens in schools. I guess the only place this does not happen is in politics. You know, there's a lady that I know of that lost a promotion because another lady in the office sabotaged her through gossip, spread lies, accentuated, exaggerated this Christian lady's foibles, her weaknesses. And so this campaign got the job that our Christian friend should have gotten. You know what her response was? Next day she sent a bouquet of flowers. Congratulations. The sabotager dissolved to tears. It led to a place of brokenness, and it led to her becoming a Christian. So I'm telling you, the field, the harvest is ripe for people who are willing to infiltrate into the workplace, into the world, who are truly committed to living out unconditional love, because it's just not happening. If you can love them like a friend, or as Jesus said, love them like an enemy, unconditionally zero in on their needs, not only will that be a service to them, but it will help you cope. Because you know what you don't have to worry about? You don't have to worry about results. And can I tell you one of the greatest things that will lead to joy? How do you get joy? You live a life where you're not worried about the results. You're only worried about causes. And you're only worried about the causes that you can create. You love unconditionally. That creates good causes. You let God take care of the rest. And you're like a boat. You just kind of go with the flow. You don't worry about the waves taking you. You just let God's current take you. And it may go in a direction you're not anticipating, but you go with God. Does any of this make sense? The justice is saying yes. Do I have a second? Okay. Because I'm telling you, if it doesn't, I'm just going to do this all over again, just add more examples until we get it. Okay? So, how do you live this out? You remember, you are being sabotaged from within. You address that. You're conscious of that. You do not let your body chemistry lead you in directions it should not go. You think in terms of what God has called you to do. You look at the needs of others, and you make yourself fulfill those needs. And you do it day after day, moment after moment. You don't worry about the results. You only worry about your causes. And if you do that enough, God's going to take care of your life. And you will experience joy no matter where you end up. Amen? All right. This is a very simple way to live. I've only given you one thing to think about in the morning. Unconditional love. Well, even one word, love. It's very simple. But it's hard to live out. And that's why we need the community of Christ. That's why we need the fellowship of God. That's why we need the Lord's Supper to be renewed. That's when we get together every Sunday. This is worth it. God can use us. So let's live the next moment unconditionally loving. Let's stand and let's sing.